It is good to see you this morning. I know we have a number of people that are traveling. I know, like Matt and Michelle had to go to a funeral over in Idaho. They had to head out, I believe, really early this morning. So let's keep him in our prayers. We have Silas and David and Adam and Grace all on like the amazing road trip of the summer. So let's keep them in our prayers. That sounds like a lot of fun. We have some good friends visiting with us this morning, Murray and Beth Wade from Oak Ridge, Tennessee, a couple of great friends of ours. It's great to have Heenan and Molly also with us this morning. I know Elizabeth's mom and dad are with us as well, and it's just good that you are here. The first rule, if you have a pen or a pencil, cross the D out of the first word in the title. There's a difference. That word means harmful. Like the weather can be harmful, take the D out, and that's actually what the word should be. That means something that you dislike, that there's a difference between those two words. And so that's the first rule this morning. Cross the D out of the first word in the title of the lesson. Sometimes there are people that are averse to rules, and one of the things I hear people say is that, well, the reason that you attend a church like this is because you just have a personality that likes rules. But I'm a free spirit. And I'm different. So, different personality. Some personalities thrive on rules. Some personalities do not. I don't really buy into that. I think it depends on perspective. I think there are some people that would view me as too much of a free spirit. And there are some people that would view me as a rule keeper, depending on the person. People would view me differently. Some people would say, "Oh no, no, no! You're not buttoned up enough." There would be other people that would view me and say, "You're way too buttoned up." Just depending on the perspective, the frame of reference. Some people might say, hey, I wasn't meant to live with any restraints. You know, I just got to be me. Got to be free sort of thing. Repeatedly, though, in the Bible, in both Testaments, we are admonished to obey God's commands or to keep God's rules, whether it's the prophets we're listening to or whether it's Moses we're listening to or Jesus that we're listening to or his apostles that we're listening to. Throughout the Testaments, and any of you that have done a daily Bible reading sort of program, especially when you're in Exodus and Leviticus and Numbers and Deuteronomy, over and over again, you're being impressed that you need to keep God's commands, you need to keep God's ordinances, you need to keep God's statutes, or it's obey, 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 of how many times that comes up in what you're reading in any particular chapter. And it just looks like to me that we all need the same reminder to obey God. No matter what your personality is. No matter if you're someone that tends to be more reserved and buttoned up, or if you view yourself as quite the free spirit, I think all of us at times struggle with rules. When 100 people are prescribed a drug, 1/3 of them will not fill the prescription. That's a statistic. That frustrates doctors. 1/3 of the people that they give a prescription for will never fill it. 1/2 of the remaining 67 will fill it, but will not take the medication correctly. They will miss doses. They will quit early, or they just won't take it. Some of that even applies with people that have like organ transplants. You would think like an organ transplant, long time on that list, we get that thing in and we're taking those drugs so that my body doesn't reject it. We're going to make sure we take that prescription correctly. Now, if the same group of people are given a prescription for their dog or cat, there's a difference. People tend to take care of their dog or cats when it comes to medication better than they take their own medication. And that just tells me that The human race at times just at times has a problem with rules, just keeping rules and just following the rules. Maybe you're like that. You buy something, there's the directions. I know how it goes together. I know in Portland, we go into Portland, like at the adult soapbox derby that's held later this month. And they're yelling at people on a megaphone, get off the track, get off the track. And here's all these Southeast Portland people. And I'm going like, good luck hurting them. They're my people. I know them. They don't follow rules. It's going to have to take one of those soapbox derbies running into them, you know, for them to kind of wake up a little bit. And then maybe they won't even wake up then. I understand those people. And so we have a lot of verses in the Bible that seem to say like, you know, God says, I'm talking to everybody out there and I'm talking to all the different personalities because you guys tend to be adverse to rules. Jesus says in the book of Luke chapter 6, verse 46, why do you call me Lord, Lord, and do not do what I say? And I think that applies to country people and city people. Urban people and rural people, why do you call me Lord, Lord, and do not do what I say? In the book of John chapter 14 and verse 21, he who has my commandments and keeps them is the one who loves me. He who does not love me does not keep my words. A little bit later, John 14, 23. By this we know that we have come to know him. If we keep his commandments, that is, it's the person that obeys God is the person that can really say, I know God, or I know who God is. 1 John 2:3. And then he says, the one who says, I have come to know him and does not keep his commandments is a liar, and the truth is not in him. That is, you can't say, well, yeah, I know God. We're like this. I've got a relationship with him. And you're not obeying him? You don't know him, John would say. And then John says in the next verse, but whoever keeps his word, in him the love of God has truly been perfected. That is, it's not only the person that obeys God knows God, it's the person that obeys God loves God, that really knows what loving God means. It sounds like that John was up against somewhat what we're up against today. People walking around claiming that they know God, but they're not obeying him. People claiming and walking around saying, I love God, but they're not obeying him. John was up against the same thing. And then in chapter 3, verse 24 of the same letter, John says, the one who keeps his commandments abides in him, or has a relationship with him, is right with him. Is one with him, is on the same side as him. And then as we close 1 John, it says, by this we know that we love the children of God when we love God and observe his commandments. That the best way that I could love my brother is by obeying God and obeying God's commandments, because a lot of God's commandments impact my brother when I keep them. In fact, when I don't keep them, that impacts my brother in a negative way when I'm not keeping God's commandments. Interesting to me, the speakers that we looked at, particularly John, I mean Jesus and John, we're reading a lot of Jesus and John. Of course, Jesus is speaking through John in those letters. The same speakers that talked a lot about keeping God's word, keeping God's commandments, are the exact same speakers who are going to talk a lot about grace and a lot about love. They're the same writers. John talks a lot about love. And Jesus talks a lot about love. And both of them talk a lot about love and a lot about grace. But they're the same speakers that talk a lot about, you got to keep God's rules. You've got to observe his commandments. They talk about that as well. And so the idea of either we have to choose love God and enjoy grace, or we have to choose keep the rules, that we're kind of like, you've got to choose one of those, that That's a choice that does not have to be made. I'm not a big breakfast guy going out to breakfast, but I like the biscuits chain because when I go to biscuits, I don't have to choose between pancakes or hash browns. A lot of other places are, okay, you either get your hash browns or get your pancakes, but you can't get both without an extra charge. Go to biscuits, and it's pancakes and hash browns. And I like that because you shouldn't ever have to choose between pancakes and hash browns. That should always just be there together. And so I think God is saying you don't have to choose between love and grace and obedience. You don't have to make a choice there. Is that that all goes together. That's part of all the same relationship. Just like a husband does not have to make a choice between, well, am I going to love my wife or be faithful to my wife? Got to make a choice. And I think on that level we would say, no. Loving your wife would include being faithful to her. It's the same thing. When I'm faithful to my wife, I'm loving my wife. When I'm loving my wife as I should, I am faithful to my wife. Let's remember that when people try to make you choose between love or obedience, when they try to make you make that choice, what they're saying is there's a difference between loving God and being faithful to God. And I think of all the passages we looked at this morning, we would say, no, there is no difference between loving God and being faithful to God. One of the things that John was up against when John writes 1 John is John is up against the Gnostics who felt that they had reached a level of enlightenment, or there was a certain knowledge that you would have access to, or you could reach a certain level of spirituality that you really don't have to keep God's rules anymore. That you kind of transcend that. Or that keeping God's rules would even be harmful now to you. And I think at times we face kind of a similar challenge. I was reading a book. It's interesting. The writer said talk about what millennials have been taught all their lives. They went to school. They went up to college. Here's the things that they've been taught two things all their lives. One is that they've been taught wherever they go, morality is relative. It's all just opinion. There is no absolute right and wrong. And it's all just in the eye of the beholder. That's what you think, and that's what you think, and that's your level of morality, and that's their level of morality. And so that's one thing they've been taught. And therefore, I just need to tolerate all other moral codes. And I just need to be okay with that. And the new character flaw is believing you're right. That's one of the biggest, and one of the biggest sins that you could commit today with this new morality is that to tell somebody else they're wrong. That's like a no-no. Or to give advice to the next generation how to live is viewed as a big no-no. You know, you're trying to impose your values upon me. All previous generations, it was really the opposite of the older generation sought to say, we're going to try to give you the best wisdom of the past. And so we're going to bend your ear on this, 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 and this. We're going to bend your ear on that. And knowing that, but a lot of young people have been disconnected from the past. From the great moral lessons of the past. One writer said, if you go to college and study the humanities now, you're not going to read great books. You're going to listen to criticisms of the great books. The great books are going to be criticized. In generations past, it was the reason that we have considered these great books is because there's a lesson to learn here, and every generation kind of needs these lessons, whether it's perseverance and self-control or whatever. And the Bible's been viewed as one of those books, is that there are great moral truths here that you need to hear about. and incorporate into your life and add to your life. Great wisdom from the past. But we have a lot of young people that are being told, do not listen to any of that. The Bible tells us that, hey, don't disconnect yourself from the past. Romans chapter 15, verse 4, what was written aforetime concerning what's in Scripture was written for your learning. You're dealing with the same God. Don't make the mistake that the Israelites made. Don't fall into the traps that they fell into, because you can. 1 Corinthians chapter 10. Don't just say, hey, all those old lessons are irrelevant. That's old stuff. That doesn't apply to me. Or that all those people from the past are just trying to impose their morality on me. No, listen and learn. And learn from the past. And then the second thing they've been told is that since everything's just kind of relative, that just kind of the greatest thing that you could do is just kind of tolerate everything. That's the new virtue. The new virtue is it's all cool. The virtue is, hey, like. That's the new virtue. And one writer said, it's very easy to say, hey, here's how open-minded I am, here's how compassionate I am, and just have people compliment you on that. But that's not virtue. It's not virtue telling people how virtuous you are. that's not a virtue. One writer said that's self-promotion, is what that is. So let's go back to the book of Exodus, chapter 32, and let's go back to the past and look at an account here. Exodus chapter 32, Israel has been delivered from bondage through amazing plagues and manifestation of God's power, and He's delivered them, and He has brought them to Mount Sinai, and He has spoken to them from heaven, and His intention for them is to be a kingdom of priests and a holy nation, and He has these grand designs for them, and He wants to give them this land flowing with milk and honey, and Moses needs to go up to the mount and receive instruction. And they become impatient. And it's interesting that, first of all, is that the 400 years of bondage had been justified by the Egyptians. It had been viewed as a good thing. And here's the verse, Exodus chapter 1, verse 7. The sons of Israel were fruitful and increased greatly and multiplied and became exceedingly mighty, so that the land was filled with them. A new king arose over Egypt who did not know Joseph. He said to his people, behold, the people of the sons of Israel are more mightier than we. Come, let us deal wisely with them, or else they will multiply, and in the event of war, they will also join themselves to those who hate us and fight against us and depart from the land. Egyptian bondage was argued or justified as a good end. We need to keep these people under control. We need to try to limit their growth because they're a fifth column. In case we're ever invaded, since they're not truly Egyptian, they could easily side with the enemy, and we have an enemy within our gates that we would not even know about. So we really need to try to keep them in check. Good end. It's amazing how many times in history that what was argued as a good cause end up killing a whole lot of people. We hear about Hitler and the 6-7 million Jews that he had exterminated in concentration camps. That was all done in the name of a good cause. To purify the race. Communism, under Stalin. 100 million people were killed. 100 million. In the name of utopia. We're going to create a utopia. That was viewed as a good cause, a noble cause. That's one reason we need to know what the rules are. Isaiah says, woe to those who call good evil and evil good,
it's really easy to get confused concerning what really is a good cause. It's easy to lose track of that. That's happening right now in our culture down in California. Let's make it aware if a man or woman, and if they're homosexual and they don't want to be that, that they're not allowed to go to a counselor who would counsel them out of that. A paid counselor. That would be against the law. You would be fined for that. That's in the name of a good cause. That's how misguided things can get. That's why the rules are important. That we remember what the rules are. Because it's very easy to get good and evil confused. It's just like a single generation. You know, when you look at the rules, first of all, when I look at what God gave Israel in Exodus 20, they were designed for the protection of the Israelites. Sometimes we forget that about the rules. Is that they're like a medication. They're like a prescription that we need to take as prescribed. And so when you look at the Ten Commandments, you find protection of the family. Honor your father and mother. If you're a mom and dad, that's a great rule. You want your kids to respect you and listen to you. When you say, hey, don't run into the street, that's important. You want them obeying the first time. You don't want them continue running, going like, what? And then have a car run over them and have to pick them up and, you know, well, now you're flat, now you're all squished. You know, that's going to ruin the day. There's also protection of marriage. You want that. Do not commit adultery. And the other one, do not covet your neighbor's wife. Right? A lot of times when I'm talking to people, especially people in the world, and they're talking about like a neat restaurant. A restaurant that maybe kind of is more like a McMinimum's, where the bar and the restaurant really aren't separated. It's, you know. One question I always have for them is, okay, I'm not adverse to going and eating somewhere where, you know, alcohol served. I'm not going to, you know. But I got a question. Is it a bar or is it more of a restaurant with just like a bar attached to it? Because I do not enjoy going into a place to eat where men are coveting my wife. That's not an enjoyable experience for me, where I'm surrounded by a bunch of creepy, single, lonely guys. Like, hey! That's no fun. That's no fun. I don't like that atmosphere. Not going to go there. I like that rule. That's a good protection there. Also, the protection of human life. Do not murder. All those are about protection. How about keep the Sabbath day? Hey, you get a mandatory day off. Boy, don't want that. I want to work all the time. You ever think about that? That Israel had a hard time even keeping a day off. I mean, isn't that kind of the epitome of, I mean, that's pretty sad. Of, you can't even keep a day off. It's kind of like you can't even fight your way out of a paper bag, right? Or you can't even find your way home, or you can't even come out of the rain type of thing, that sort of thing. I was getting a haircut yesterday, and my whatever she is, barber or hairstylist, was talking to her husband, and I could tell it wasn't going very well. Well, he's at home, they're having company over. And she just wanted him to like light the barbecue and put the chicken on. She says, I can do the steak, but just light the barbecue and put the chicken on. And he's going like, well, I can't find it. I can't find the chicken. And it's, you know, maybe you've experienced that. I can't find it. What do I do? How do I do this? You know, she's kind of talking on the phone pretty good at a pretty good rate, you know. I mean, that's kind of like you can't keep a day off. Turn it on. On. Chicken on it. Right? You should be able to do that. Protection of private property is in the Ten Commandments. Don't want someone stealing your stuff.
The Bible often makes the point, even around when God gives the law here, is that the law was given for our benefit. In the book of Deuteronomy chapter 5, verse 33, you shall walk in all the way which the Lord your God has commanded you, that you may live and that it may be well with you, and that you may prolong your days in the land which you possess. Yeah, prolong your days. Now, I was at an event recently out at the Tualatin Crawfish. Was it there? I saw a place that said, hey, do you want to live to be 120? And I'm thinking, I don't know if I've got enough money to last me till I'm 90. See, it's living to 120 is, do I have enough money to make it to 120? You got to factor that in too. And I'm going like, well, I don't know. I need to save up a little bit more if I want to live to 120. Because that's a long time. Because that's a lot of years of being retired and living on a retirement income. In the book of Deuteronomy chapter 6 and in verse 24, so the Lord commanded us to observe all these statutes, to fear the Lord our God for our good always, and for our survival. For our survival. In the book of Deuteronomy chapter 28, talk about if... He says, now it shall be, if you diligently obey the Lord your God by being careful to do all His commandments which I command you today, the Lord your God will set you high above all the nations on the earth, and all these blessings will come upon you and overtake you. Verse 13, the Lord will make you the head and not the tail, and you only will be above, and you will not be underneath, if you listen to the commandments of the Lord your God. You want a head life or a tail life? And I think you know when you got one or the other. Right now, I feel like the head. I run into people, it looks like they're the tail right now. There's a difference between when you're living the life when you're the head and living the life when you're the tail. Because living the life when you're the tail means often you're living in some pretty bad neighborhoods. You don't have very good food. You don't have very good neighbors. At times you don't have very good access to health care. Head, tail. And God says, I want you to be the head. I want these blessings to come upon you and overtake you. In the book of Exodus chapter 32, when they make the golden calf, God says that they sat down to eat and drink and rose up to play after they made the calf. And play there does not mean checkers. Doesn't mean they were doing board games. Typically it has the connotation of sexual play, is what that word means. Then it says, God says to Moses, you need to get down because my people have corrupted themselves. And the word there means go to ruin. Go to ruin. Go to ruin. And then it says in verse 25, 19, it says that Moses gets down and hears the music and the dancing. And I like the dancing going on, it's like waltzes and stuff. And then it says that Aaron had let the people get out of control. King James says naked. And I think the word naked is because the word means to unloose. And I think I can see why the King James translators use that is that a lot of times when people unloose, one of the things they're unloosing is garments. Or a good indication that someone is getting out of control is the fewer clothes they have on. If is often an indication that we're getting out of control, the fewer clothes that we're wearing. One writer said, my first reaction to a command might be that nobody, not even God, tells me what to do. I think there's a lot of people in Portland that are right in that category. I used to be there. No one's going to tell me what to do, not even God. No one's going to tell me what to do, even if it's good for me. Illustration of the prescriptions. There's your medication. You need that. I'm not going to take that. But it's good for you. It's good for you. Here are some services. Go and stand in line and no. But it's good for you. It's good for you. Hey, here's a free checkup, not going. But it's good for you, but I'm not going. But it's free. But the story of the golden calf also reminds us that without rules or God's rules, we quickly become slaves to our passions, and there's nothing freeing about that. The story suggests something more, unchaperoned. When we go through life as men and women unchaperoned by Christ, we, and left to our own untutored judgment, we aim low. We tend to aim really low. And we worship qualities that are beneath us. And we come up with rules that are not good. About 5 years or so, I went to a funeral. It was like on a Thursday, Tuesday, something like that. During the funeral, they served communion, or what they called communion. And it wasn't that the tray just came through. You had to get up out of your seat, pew, and go up to the front and get it. Well, my relatives are looking at me, this preacher. Guess what? I'm not going. Boy, they didn't understand that. It was like I had a second head on me all of a sudden. Like, what's wrong with you? And what had I done? What I'd done is that I violated a human rule. One human rule I violated, well, you're here and it's their place. Just to be nice, you should show up and do that. Just to be nice. See, the Lord's Supper's on the first day of the week, and that's when I'm going to partake. And I don't find it at a wedding or a funeral. I find it in an assembly of worship. And also people that are being faithful, that are actually following the Bible. But that's a good example of when we're left to our own devices, we make our own rules, and then we end up condemning the wrong people. Because all of a sudden it was like, boy, what's wrong with Mark? Not much of a Christian. You know, he's not going up and do that. Without understanding really what the Bible says about that. That's what happens when we're unchaperoned and untutored. And that's kind of the problem of human ideologies. Is that they arise when truth is ignored. They often are disguised as science. A lot of human ideologies walk around as science. A lot of them walk around as freedom. Others walk around as happiness. Some walk around as this is enlightenment. Some walk around as this is spiritual, or this is knowledge, or this is truth. And even Timothy was told in 1 Timothy chapter 6 and verse 20, that is, beware of the science or the knowledge that is falsely so-called. Human ideology. That's walking around as enlightenment or as knowledge. Human ideologies claim to know how to make the world a better place. Communism claims, socialism claims, we know how to make the world a better place. But there's one problem with human ideologies. A lot of people that are into them want to fix the world without fixing their own lives first. We got a lot of people in Portland like that. I'm going to go out and change the world. Okay, but before you do that, why don't you take care of the mess in your own life? Yeah, let's fix the world. Let's work on the world. But before we do any of that, take care of the mess in your own life right now. Get your anger under control. Get your selfishness under control. Because if you don't, you're just going to go out and create mayhem. 2 Peter chapter 2, verse 19 talks about people like that, that promises freedom while they're a slave. Also, human ideologies tend to retool even the accounts of the Bible for their own selfish purposes. Even communism did that. Took different Bible accounts and kind of retooled it for their own purposes. Also, they tend to ignore or forget about very clear and basic Bible verses. Sometimes they run into, well, but I'm into relationship and not rules. And that sounds pretty good. I mean, I can see why people buy into that. I mean, that's a clever way of putting that. But Jesus talked about a relationship with him that includes keeping what he said. If you love me, you'll keep my commands. Or not everyone who says to me, Lord, Lord, will enter the kingdom, but those that do the will of my Father. But you know what? Here's another way maybe that helps us understand this. Is that if you commit adultery, that's going to undermine your relationship with your wife or husband. But adultery is a rule. Don't commit that. That is a rule. But it's also a rule that if you violate, really greatly impacts the relationship. A rebellious child impacts relationship. Relationship suffers when a child is being rebellious. Just like my disobedience undermines my relationship with God. Or James 4:4 says, called certain Christians, hey, you're adulteresses. You're not obeying me. That's impacting our relationship. Some would say, well, it's all about love, not rules. But every command that God has ever given is a manifestation for our love for God or for others. I think in the two great commandments, Jesus says, love the Lord your God with all your heart, mind, soul, and strength, and love your neighbor as yourself. Then he says, upon these two commands hang the law and the prophets. That these are rules. And every other rule that you ever run into fits somewhere into love your neighbor as yourself or love God with all your heart. Some people sometimes might say, well, the details don't matter. The details really don't matter. Or they really don't matter. They're important, but they're really not that important. And I guess on details, I'd say, whether we use a piano or we sing, that's a detail that really doesn't, that's not that important. Whether we immerse or sprinkle water on someone's head and call it baptism, that particular detail, whether the Lord's Supper is on Sunday or if it's on a Friday, that detail really doesn't matter. It's just more to get the overall thing. To me, and that sounds pretty good. That really does sound pretty good. I understand why people bite on that. Or there's a level of spirituality that you rise to where you really don't need to follow the rules. See, my problem with that is that really doesn't apply anywhere else in life. Common courtesy is a detail. You open a door for someone. You say please or thank you. Common courtesy. Waiting your turn in line. Those are just details. Do they matter? When we don't follow those details, what happens? To me, it seems like relationships suffer. You ever seen a picture of like traffic in like Nigeria? Where no one's going to wait for anybody else. And everyone had just hit like an intersection and no one's willing to give way. You get 5 hours of gridlock. When you live in a country where we come to a four-way stop and you go. And we understand that we just don't go there and then all try to go at once. We don't sit at the intersection for 5 hours in America like that. We wait our turn. You got merging traffic. You come in. I go. Person behind me. You weave. Your turn. We're not going to cut a line. Life is orderly. Relationships are great when people are following the details. Remembering your anniversary is a detail, but does that mean it doesn't matter? I don't have to get you a card. I don't have to remember. I don't have to remember your birthday. I don't have to get you a card. That's just a detail. The important thing is the relationship. What's going to happen in your relationship if you don't remember any of those details? See, to me, when you apply it to things like that, all of a sudden the details to me, I think, are part of the relationship. I went to a restaurant recently last Sunday. I've been there before. They don't serve iced tea. Big turnoff. You lost me. I don't know if I'll be back. If you cannot have iced tea as one of your options, even if it's like the Lipton Nescafe or whatever it is, iced tea, okay. If you just can't like brew some yourself or have this little dispenser that has it, to me, that's a detail that, you know, you need to take care of that. You need to have an iced tea option. That's, to me, is a detail. Little details like that matter in life. To me, just respect, common courtesy, treating the customer right sort of details. Say thank you is a detail. That's a detail. Those are all details. And so, I don't know, to me when you put it on another level like that, all these details, you call somebody, you leave a message, they call you back, is it that? You gonna deal with a life insurance agent or an auto insurance agent that never returns any of your calls? That's a detail, small little detail. They never get your bill right? That's just a small detail. An important thing, man, is the relationship we got. Yeah, but you don't return my calls. That doesn't sound like we have a relationship, but those are details. And so I guess in every other aspect of life, we understand that details are part of the relationship. But all of a sudden, when we get to us and God, somehow it's easy to buy into like, the details don't matter. But that's not the way we operate in any other aspect of our life. The Bible is written for our learning, and it's filled with all sorts of examples where when people didn't follow the details on a command, good things did not happen. And Jesus also addressed the issue. He who is faithful in a very little thing is faithful also in much. He who is unrighteous in a very little thing is unrighteous also in much. I think he addressed the issue there. The details, that is the details God has given, not man, the details God has given. Those details matter. Maybe one here this morning. What to do to be saved? That's pretty important. He that believeth and is baptized shall be saved. Mark 16:16. If you're not baptized, really consider that. If you don't have a relationship with Jesus, you're going to need it. Not just when you meet him. Not just when you meet him at death or when he comes again. You're going to need a relationship with Jesus long before you meet him. I've never met anyone who did great without Jesus. I met people that have survived, that have existed, but I've never met anyone who has handled the ups and downs of life great without Jesus. They've always paid a price. Let's be standing and singing the invitation song.